Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're discussing secondhand gifts, VT Sacks, and we're giving away $1,000.
Wait, we're giving away $1,000 or you're giving away $1,000?
No, this is a joint effort. This is both Matt and Joel combined, the How to Money team. We are giving away, and the team is just the two of us. But
technically, we're giving away $500 each, if we're going to be honest with it. But let's talk about our cash giveaway. You know, with it being the end of the year, Joel, like we were talking, and we were kind of feeling this wave of gratitude recently. We're discussing how the year had been going. We are incredibly thankful for you listeners out there who listen to us three times a week.
Even if you only listen twice a week, we love you still.
Even just once, like, you know, we like you as well.
Still got love.
But, you know, like we wouldn't have the show, of course, if, you know, we didn't have our listeners. And so we decided that we wanted to kind of translate those feelings of thankfulness to charitableness. That's actually a word.
Right? Oh, is it really? Nicely done.
I'm pretty sure it is. So that means, yeah, we're going to give away $1,000 of our money to you. And specifically, we're going to give away $100 to 10 different listeners so that you can then be charitable in your community.
Oh, so that's why we're calling it the cash giveaway.
Yes.
Because we're giving away money and then we're hoping that you in turn will give that money away. And yeah, like that all has to do with how Matt and I feel about money, which we try to communicate on a regular basis, that it's not just about making, saving, and investing as much as you can, but part of the joy of having more money in your life is also that you're able to give more money away, preferably to those in need where you live. And yeah, that's something we try to regularly do here in Atlanta where we live, give our money to organizations that matter to us, that are doing good where we live in our community. And that's something we hope that you'll incorporate into your life as well. So here's how it works. Again, we're calling this the How to Money Cash Giveaway.
Giveaway.
And you can enter to win $100. All you got to do is follow us on Instagram at How to Money Pod, like the giveaway post that we're putting up today, tag two of your friends who you think might be interested, and then leave a comment about what good you are planning to do if this $100 hits your account. Like, what would you do with the money? We want to hear what kind of good you would be doing in your community. And that's all. Only one entry per person. You have until noon on December 21st to be entered into the giveaway.
That's right. Next Tuesday. And we're going to announce the winners on that Wednesday episode. And we're also calling it the cash giveaway because literally we're going to Venmo or Cash App you this money if you are selected as one of the winners. So again, look for that post on Instagram and we wish you the best of luck.
Yeah, and it's going to be in boring old fiat currency, US dollars. Sorry to...
No, we're not going to dip into Joel's Dogecoin stash. We are not. But all right, let's move on to our Friday flight. And these episodes are all about the different stories we've come across this week and how they pertain to our money. Joel, USPS, the Postal Service, they announced shipping deadlines for Christmas earlier this week as we're kind of pressing up against Christmas is next week. It's happening.
Can you believe that it's almost here?
No. But today is the last day to send something first class and have it expected to arrive before December 25th, before Christmas. So yeah, if you want to get those Christmas cards to show up on time, you need to hop to it. And then for everything else that you ship tomorrow, you're going to have to pay extra. You're going to have to maybe pay extra for priority mail if you're wanting it to show up on time, if you're using the Postal Service. But dude, honestly, I guess I'm wondering, like, how many folks still ship gifts specifically themselves instead of just ordering that item and, you know, having it delivered directly to that person? Like, I know it's not the same vibe, but shipping is just so expensive. It's just one of those tasks that I don't ever look forward to doing.
It feels so nice to put wrapped gifts in the mail and send them, and then you know, like, they're perfectly put together for your family member or your friend, but it's too labor intensive. Yeah. It's too expensive to do those. So I would.
It's like the giveaway. It's like you want to wrap a gift and then send it again in another box.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, for us at least, like we visit all of our close friends and family in person. And so we're not having to ship any presents. But I remember as a kid receiving like the Christmas package from grandma and grandpa.
Oh, yeah.
Like out in Illinois. Dude, that was like the best day of the year because it was just this giant box packed full of different gifts and like the packing peanuts. So it always made it fun because you're like digging through there and be like, oh, what's in here? That and then the cookie tins as well, because there's always a ton of Christmas cookies. Which, by the way, do you have a favorite Christmas cookie?
Oh, I think probably the Snickerdoodle.
Snickerdoodle, yeah. Cinnamon sugar, mm-hmm. Shortbread cookie.
Yeah.
The classic one my grandparents made were, they're called chocolate crinkles. Ever heard of those or had those before?
No.
They're like these dark chocolate cookies.
Save me one this year?
We never bake them, but maybe we should kind of carry on the tradition.
I think you should. And I just want to mention, too, if you're trying to save money on these cards and you can't get your act together in time, maybe a early New Year card instead of trying to make that Christmas turnaround make sense. And there's so many easier ways to send Christmas cards these days.
Yeah.
I feel like we have skipped them for like a decade straight, our family. We need to get our act together.
It's been about 5 years for us. Like, yeah. We did it every single year.
Y'all were good at it for a long time.
Yeah, I think you even helped us with our last Christmas card photo.
I've taken a couple of your Christmas card photos.
Because I'm like, all right, Joel, the settings are set. Angle it this way. We're going to sit right here. Just pull the trigger.
Exactly.
Any old dummy can do it.
And any old dummy did. But
you did a good job.
Speaking of gifts, Matt, let's talk about secondhand gifts for a second. I'm curious to know your thoughts in a second. I want, like, if it's frugal or cheap. But before I ask you what you think, like, I think it can feel like right now the whole world is kind of conspiring against us to spend more of our money, especially in the last week leading up to Christmas. Prices aren't as low as they were a couple of weeks ago. And if we've been putting off our present buying, we're likely looking to spend more than we want. And Fast Company actually had this interesting article offering tips on giving secondhand gifts. They got some experts together who are trying to normalize not buying brand new and trying to make it culturally acceptable to buy used gifts, which I appreciate that mission. One survey actually showed that 2/3 of folks are totally fine getting secondhand gifts. They don't mind receiving a secondhand gift, but for some reason, as givers, we still feel really self-conscious about giving something that's used. We'll link to the full story in our show notes. But I want to know from you. I don't think it's about getting rid of like junk in your closet or crap that you don't want. That's not the spirit of giving a secondhand gift. That would be cheap, I think. But in your estimation, like, would you go to the thrift store or would you re-gift something?
Me?
Like, how do you feel?
Me?
Yeah, is it frugal or cheap?
We talked about this like a little bit, like maybe a couple months ago we talked about it because I think you were buying something for Ezzy for Christmas like a few months ago off of Facebook.
Oh, that's right. I got some used trucks for the dude.
So I know how you feel about it because you made the purchase, I'm pretty sure. And I'm totally for it as well, man. I mean, if you are able to take something that somebody is going to maybe toss out and get it at a steep discount and it's still a great item, I think that's totally the way to go. And so, yeah, us continuing to talk about it, though, I think is just a great way to make this something that isn't taboo. You know, like this is a topic that should be talked about more. We want people buying used rather than new. And the thing is, too, with the supply chain hangups, hiccups, delays, all that, you might be forced to buy something used this year.
Might not have another option.
Yeah, exactly. So this might be the perfect year to kind of test the waters a little bit and see, A, if anybody notices, but B, see how you feel about it. Because like you said, Joel, I think a lot of us feel good about receiving something that might be gently used. But oftentimes it does come down to maybe the feeling of guilt that, you know, that you might have, or just it's like, oh, am I being cheap here by doing this? It doesn't really matter.
I think as long as you're being thoughtful, then you're not being cheap.
It's the heart behind it.
Yes.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you're buying used, as long as the heart behind it is.
It's like, I got you this dish towel from the thrift store. It's like, that's not a good gift. Yeah. But you might find a cool vintage item there that is way better than anything new you could get.
Well, I think that's a part of it, too, is because oftentimes used items that you can re-gift tend to be like a little bit nicer, right? Because if it's something that's super cheap and plastic or something that's going to break, well, like secondhand, when it comes to those kind of products, are probably not a good way to go.
Yeah.
But if you can get something really nice, even something that might be considered an antique, I totally think that's the way to go.
All right, cool. Glad to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah.
And yeah, hopefully some of our listeners, if you do give used gifts, we'd love to hear from you. Drop us a line. Let us know how you do it and how you make it not awkward, because I think it's a good thing to strive for. And Matt, let's talk about investing here for a second, because there was this new survey that just came out this week, and it found that 68% of investors have said that the performance of their investments impacts their mental health. And mental health is something that, you know, we talk about more and more in this country, which I think is a good thing. But in the era that we're currently living in, this really doesn't surprise me that 7 in 10 people almost have say that how their investments are performing has an impact on how they're feeling about life. And this study was from Schroders, and it also found that people have been turning to riskier investments over the past year, which I think Yeah, we've seen that in a big way. Younger folks have been more willing to make riskier bets with their investment dollars. And we're not against taking risk with your money, you and I, right? Investing in the market is this inherently risky thing to do, we would say. But we have always said, even before inflation started going off the rails, that inflation is a bigger risk to you. It's going to slowly erode the value of your savings. And that is something that, again, we have seen in a big way this year.
Or not so slowly.
Yeah, or more rapidly.
Considering 6.8%.
Yeah, in the case of 2021, more rapidly.
Where we're sitting right now.
But yeah, I feel like this increased risk-taking is leading to more mental stress, and the more volatility in some of these investments is stressing people out. And so I think this is, yeah, just another reason why you and I were fans of the Simple Path, which is index funds. And it also works really well from a return perspective over time. But it's not just that. It helps you sleep at night. It helps curb worries, fears, and anxiety. And so, yeah, if you're one of those people who's like constantly tracking your portfolio, you're maybe taking on too much risk and it's making it hard to sleep at night. You get cold sweats from time to time, mm-hmm. something like that. You need to think not just about performance, but also about your life and your mental well-being. And if you can't handle those gyrations very well, then you probably need to rethink your investment strategy.
Totally. Yeah. While we're talking about index funds, actually, let's talk about a favorite of ours, which is VT Saxe. And this is Vanguard's total stock market index fund. It's got all the things that we love going on. It's you're well diversified by owning a small piece of thousands of U.S. companies with just this one fund. And the expense ratio is minuscule at 0.04%. That's what I'm looking for when it comes to index funds that I want to invest in.
No doubt.
And the Wall Street Journal, they report that this fund now holds over $1.3 trillion, which means that this VT Saxe fund holds more than 10% of overall U.S. mutual fund dollars, which is, this is incredible. It makes us so happy to see so many more folks pouring money into widely diversified low-cost index funds, because, you know, like, investing strategies, just generally speaking, can get really complicated, but yours does not have to be complicated. VT Saxe, or VOO, that's the S&P 500 index. These are both excellent one-stop shops for a lot of folks with a 10 plus year investing timeline ahead of them. They are incredibly boring, right? Like, they're not being handled by a fund manager who's buying and selling and reallocating and rebalancing the portfolio.
There's like no cool Cathie Wood story to go along with it.
Yeah, there is not a narrative associated with it, except that this is associated with the entire country. Like, this is how our country is doing, essentially, when it comes to these businesses. And, you will see some fluctuations when it comes to index funds, but not like you would with individual stocks, individual companies, which oftentimes see movement just based on the musings or a tweet of a particular CEO who might also happen to be Time's Person of the Year. Like, these kind of things, these little media appearances, comments, have massive effects of the performance of a particular company, and that's what we're trying to avoid here.
Yeah, and speaking of Cathie Wood, when you look at, she's, for folks who don't know, like, she is this superstar fund manager who had just a ton of success last year. The funds that she was in charge of, the earnings were insane.
They crushed.
But the last 4 or 5, 6 months, or I don't even, a while. And maybe this entire year, they've
she's performed poorly.
Plummeted, yeah. And So what goes up must come down, sort of thing. And yeah, if you're riding the high, you're happy. But I mean, a lot of people have lost a lot of money. A lot of people got into at the exact wrong time into her funds. And so, yeah, we like index funds for so many reasons. And speaking of the index fund VT Saxe, Matt, which is one of my personal favorites, we think that politicians, you and I, should have to stick their investment dollars in index funds too.
Yeah.
And we're not the fans.
Not that you and I are politicians, but right. We believe.
Exactly.
You and I believe.
We're not fans of forcing anyone into index funds except politicians. And you and I, we intentionally stay away from politics as much as possible on the show. But we're going to briefly offer our nonpartisan thoughts about the ways politicians are allowed to invest. And right now, they can buy shares of individual stocks to their heart's content, mm-hmm. as much as they want. And that right to do that was defended on Wednesday by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. And we just want to put it out there that we completely disagree with her feelings on that. Like, we've seen politicians abuse this ability in recent months, in the last couple of years. In fact, both former Republican senators from the state of Georgia, where we live, made trades early on in the pandemic that benefited them financially in a big way. Trades were made on the exact day of an important COVID briefing in January. And if it's not illegal, well, it's certainly shady. And yeah, we're fans of index funds for everyone, but we think that our elected leaders who are steering the ship of this country should not be able to profit from the meetings they take and the laws they're seeking to enact. So yeah, I know they're probably not going to create legislation to prevent themselves from enriching themselves, but I think they should.
Yeah, they should, because it's a complete conflict of interest. Who's to say, because like one of the arguments against prosecuting or, you know, like, because there is a rule in place, right, that says that
you have to report.
Have to report, and that you're, you know, you shouldn't be swayed by the information that you glean. But how do you prove, you know, like someone could say, well, I was going to buy that anyway. Right. And so the inability to prove that someone does have a conflict of interest or insider information is incredibly difficult. So like what we're saying is, let's just remove that option from those elected officials, because we're not saying that they can't invest at all. But instead, let's just say, OK, if you want to invest in the entire market. That way, the different laws that you pass and the different committees that you oversee or the different hearings that you are calling into place, that you're presiding over those things just out of a desire to do good, and that you're not tempted to make decisions one way or the other in order to see your portfolio experience a little boost. Specifically, Pelosi's husband, he's got like tens of millions of dollars, right? And
invested in the stock market.
Individual companies, yeah. Right? And so like one of them is like Visa. So he's got between like, I think like 5 and 20 million in Visa. It's like, okay, who's to say that if there is some sort of decision that needed to be made that, you know, like Congress, Nancy, like they're not making like, oh, there's a lenient decision specifically towards that company. How do you ensure that that decision wasn't being made because you do want to see that boost in your portfolio? It's incredibly difficult. So that's what we're saying. Let's remove that option altogether and invest in the total stock market or the S&P 500 or even target date funds, right? Just any fund that doesn't involve specific types of companies being in there as opposed to just a sampling of the entire thing.
Yeah, they should not be allowed to trade like they have been. And again, this cuts across party lines. Republicans and Democrats have both been guilty of this. And so, we wanted to point this out. Like, those remarks are defending something that we think has been abused on both sides of the aisle. And this is a privilege that Congress people have that should go away and should go away soon. All right, Matt, we've got more to get to, including the parts of our country where it's cheapest to live. We'll get to that right after this break.
All right, this is our Friday flight. We're going to get to several other stories, including we're going to talk about I bonds. We're going to talk about inflation, other things that start with I.
We already talked about inflation on Wednesday, Matt. Do we need to do it again?
We're going to brush up on it a little bit.
All right, I think there are more things we got to cover.
Yeah, and we're also going to mention our ludicrous headline of the week. This one comes from NPR, and it reads, "The best and worst places to live if you only care about money." And the reason this headline was ludicrous, in our estimation, is that money shouldn't be the only factor when you are deciding where to live. But
it
of course,
shouldn't be the only thing you care about.
Yeah,
I love my family, and
I do too. And but like money,
love you too, buddy.
Money's incredibly important. But there are other things to consider. But we did want to talk about the story because it's worth mentioning which places might be a good fit for more financially conscious folks. And three of the locations that offer the highest standard of living for college graduates are in Texas, including Houston. For folks with a high school degree, the most affordable places to live are Natchez, Mississippi, and Gallup, New Mexico.
I think it's Natchez.
Is it? Is it really Natchez?
Yeah, I think so.
What did I say? Natchez?
Yeah, it's not like nachos.
Maybe. These are like two of the top locations worth considering. And the reason we mention this is because the pandemic has caused a lot of us to rethink our current way of life. And, you know, moving, living a more flexible lifestyle, it is a bigger priority for many folks. And obviously, like most folks probably won't up and move to Mississippi just because they heard us talking about it or because they heard it mentioned in an NPR article. It's still helpful to remember that you aren't necessarily tied down to where you currently live. There's opportunity across our country to earn more and the potential to save more overall.
Yeah. Yeah. Stories like this, I think, are helpful to see that you don't have to move to San Francisco or to New York City in order to score the biggest paycheck while you're attempting to save a lot of money. Because it is interesting in that same study, they did find that San Francisco and New York, some people assume that they're either prohibitively expensive and so it doesn't make sense for anyone to move there. But that's not true. There are a lot of high-paying jobs there for people with certain skills. But then, they are much more difficult for people with just a high school diploma to live there. You really have to have, to in order to make it in one of those towns and it not to be just a slog, you do have to have a decent income, right? But even if you are earning a lot in those places, you're spending a ton on everything. And so, yeah, instead you can, especially with now in an age where our jobs are much more flexible, many of us can work from wherever we want. We can prioritize going to smaller towns in the United States that can make it easier to stretch our incomes. And yeah, if you're really flexible, you can just bounce around from city to city full time. Because like I'm thinking about traveling nurses, Matt.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Have you seen some of the stories recently about how much traveling nurses are able to make?
They're making bank, making a lot of money.
Some of them can make like almost $10,000 in a week in some locations with certain skills. Some traveling nurses are tripling their salaries. And so, yeah, it's one of those things where, yeah, you don't have to do it forever, but you can make a lot of money. But we would say that most folks don't, I don't think, and most folks should not prioritize where they live by only thinking about the bottom line of tax rates and cost of living. Like, you know, you shouldn't necessarily move to a state with no income tax because your state currently has one and you think that's bogus. These should be maybe factors in your decision, but there are other things that are strongly worth considering, like how attached you are to your community, how close are you to family and friends, how close are you to the outdoor activities that you love. Those are the kind of things that matter and move the needle in a big way. But it's not that finances shouldn't be considered.
Yes, there is just more to life than just the money. Like you said, Joel, relationships in particular are incredibly important. And even just thinking through the different things that we want to spend our time doing when we're not working. Because if you're only looking at work, then what you should be doing is going to where you can get paid the most money for that work. But our life includes so much more than just the work that we do. And this is like a little foreshadowing for next Wednesday's episode, where we're going to talk about how we need to be putting money in its proper place. It's a big part of why we're also doing this cash money giveaway. Because we want to demonstrate that it's not about hanging on to as much money as possible. Look for other ways that you can pay it forward, where you can give that money away. And so let's keep moving. Let's touch on the unprecedented demand for I-bonds. Bloomberg, they reported that more people bought I-bonds in November of this year than any month on record. Although, you know, they've only been keeping track of the stat for the past 8 years.
Hey, How to Money's on track to give away more money this year than we've ever given away. But we've only been keeping that stat for 6 months. So.
Can you go ahead and hit publish on that press release? But I know that we've talked about I-bonds a lot lately, but it's worth mentioning them again. Because honestly, like, they have not been a great buy for a whole lot of years while inflation rates were pretty low. But they are a great buy for a ton of folks right now. Remember, you are limited to $10,000 per person per calendar year. So if you've got cash on the sidelines that you don't want to invest in the market, but it's money that you also don't want to see get smoked by high rates of inflation, you can buy $10,000 worth of I-bonds now, and then you could do this again in early January once it's 2022. You're limited to $10,000 every year. So you don't want to miss the window for putting that money in. Joel, I think are you talking about getting some?
Yeah, man,
I'm doing it.
As well? I'm doing it.
I like it.
In the next few days, going to put 10 grand in, hopefully, and then planning to do the same in January.
Nice,
so,
dude.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great way to diversify your investments.
Exactly.
And especially if you know that this is money that you will likely not need to touch over the next at least 12 months.
And I-bonds were completely unattractive for a long period of time.
We never mentioned them on the show, but they have quickly become something that are very attractive.
Yeah, and the reason they were so unattractive is because rates of inflation were incredibly low, and so what you would get paid with an I-bond was pretty meaningless, but it's not meaningless anymore. And so, yeah, if you've heard us yapping, but you haven't pounced, now is a good time to do so. One quick inflation note, by the way, Matt, because we did dedicate a lot of thoughts to it on Wednesday, but Alison Schreger wrote this great piece in Bloomberg about how much power we have as individuals to fight inflation. And she just made some really great points in there that I wanted to kind of touch on. You know, while politicians, they seem to be quick to blame greedy companies for the higher prices that we're seeing, as consumers, it turns out we have never been in a stronger position, largely because of the internet. Like, we can comparison shop like never before, thanks to just like plugins like Honey or Camel on our web browsers. And if you want to know where to get the best price on gas before you even start driving, there's an app called Gas Buddy, right? That can help you out there. Mm-hmm. And you can plot out your course according to where you're going to be able to get the lowest price per gallon. And Matt, I even thought this week when I was shopping at Aldi that prices seem to have, and maybe this is just anecdotal and not accurate, but it certainly seems like prices have risen less there than they have at some of the other grocery stores I've been to. And
no, that's empirical data. That's not anecdotal evidence.
Well, I think this is just a reminder to all of us, like, don't take inflation lying down. It feels like one of those things. We talked about how you have power over it and how your own personal rate of inflation matters and how you can calculate that. But at the same time, we have a lot of power on our hands to comparison shop, to substitute things that we were planning to buy and getting a different ingredient instead. There are so many ways that we can make inflation less harmful to our wallets. And it's easy to start pointing fingers, but the better thing to do is to point a finger at ourselves and be like, what can I do to push back? Because yeah, there are a lot of things that we can do as individuals.
I love it. Let's talk about some financial literacy, dude. Our home state here in Georgia is joining the ranks of states that require a personal finance class in order to graduate. This increased personal finance education will actually be a big part of the economics class that kids are already taking in high school. And so starting in the 2022-2023 school year, all high schoolers will be learning more about budgets, credit, ID theft, taxes, all the things that we like to talk about here on our show. And this is great news because, you know, learning the basics of personal finance early on can save a lot of heartache down the road. But we also hope that creativity is prioritized in how this material is taught, because it's, you know, it's easy to bore folks, especially teenagers, when you're discussing money. Making it fun makes an enormous difference. This is a part of, this is what we've strived to do here on our show, is how can we make something that is typically super dry, topics that you normally don't want to hear about, how do we make those things something that's a little more attractive, a little more palatable? That right there has been a big driving force behind the mission of our show. Let's talk about these topics in a way that is engaging and interesting and that seems relevant. And I hope that that is something that teachers here in our home state are able to take to heart.
Yeah. I feel like most people, when you start talking about personal finance, they plug their ears, they run away screaming, that kind of stuff. And yeah, we want to make it palatable, interesting, maybe even energizing.
Yes.
Because it is one of those things where if we don't learn how to think about and handle our personal finances well, that lack of knowledge is going to plague us. It's going to be like an anvil around our wallets or our purses, like as we go through this world, kind of like what Jacob Marley in the Christmas story. Christmas,
he's got his chains.
Yeah.
Yeah, dragging those chains.
That's like what it feels like if you don't know how to handle personal finances well. And so not only are we glad that it's happening, but we hope that teachers are encouraged to and find ways to make it relevant and fun. And if there's any way we can help, reach out to us, of course, at How to Money. But yeah, Matt, let's do this one last reminder to our listeners about the How to Money Cash giveaway. All you got to do is go follow How to Money Pod on Instagram, tag two of your friends, leave a comment about how you would use $100 to do something good in your community. That's all it takes to enter. And we will announce the winners on this coming Wednesday's episode.
That's right, man. And so that's going to be it for today's Friday Flight. We hope everyone has a great weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday. And buddy, until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.